Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Day two of no speaker vacation in the House of Representatives. And the children, yes, the children are running amok. In fact, McCarthy allies are, they're talking revenge. They're plotting against their other Republicans. They're going to get them back. You wait and see. And look, I got a bunch of emails today from all the different right-wing MAGA groups saying, with Matt Gaetz saying, I'm under attack. Yeah, Matt, you kind of pulled this on yourself. You kind of did the dumb thing that everyone said don't do. You touch the button, you touch the hot stove, and now you're surprised that you're going to get burned. And oh, are you going to get burned? In fact, you're going to get Cawthorned. It is going to happen. If you remember what happened with Madison Cawthorn, remember him? Remember the cautionary tale we talked about him? Lots of dirty laundry. Lots of weird kind of him in bizarre poses with other naked men. It was all kinds of stuff. All kinds of stuff. And this is one of those things where if you live in a glass house, you don't throw stones. Don't do it. You just don't do dumb stuff. So it has begun. Mark Wayne Mullen, the senator. Now, this is the thing. The House is usually where all this insanity plays itself out. You know, because it's supposed to. The House is where the rages of the people are supposed to rage. You're supposed to have chaos a little bit. The Senate is where the upper chamber, where the adults are supposed to be. But you had Mark Wayne out today. Oh, Mark Wayne threw the opening salvo in the Cawthorning of Matt Gaetz. Brad evidently said that Matt Gaetz told him, bragged how he would crush up erectile dysfunction medicine and then snort it and chase it with energy drinks so he could go all night long. I said, this is obviously before he got married. And this is another one of those things where you go, wait a second. You said he had sex with underage women. You can't have sex with an underage girl. You can't. Because it's a crime. It's called rape. That's what that's called. And by you saying that he did, kind of pulls you in. We're in kind of weird territory. So while they're cawthorning Matt Gaetz, and no one deserves it more than Matt Gaetz, going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Because ultimately, the Republicans want their pound of flesh. They're going to get their revenge. And this is, you know, some people are saying, could this be the end of the party? I don't know. I'm not going that far. But there will be a pie fight. Now, here's the thing. I don't need a Harvard professor to tell me that things are bad. In fact, Daniel Ziblatt, his name is, was a professor of government at Harvard University. He was quoted in the Washington Post. And look, again, you don't necessarily need to be a Harvard professor. He says, if you want to know what it looks like when democracy is in trouble, this is what it looks like. It should set off alarm bells that something is not right. And look, something has not been right for some time. You know, the fact that we elected a reality TV star as president and then expected him to have plans that he didn't. We expected the Republican Party, to change its spots and not enrich the wealthy and actually do something, anything, for the working class. Things are not right. Now, On the Democratic side, things are right. Joe Manchin said that he would have voted for Kevin McCarthy, which you go, of course you would have, Joe, because that's what you do. But today, the fun, the entertainment, the main talking points all over the right-wing outrage machine has been Trump, Speaker Trump. In fact, Trump, I guess, put out a picture of himself as Speaker, which is kind of weird. But Marjorie Trainwreck Greene, she threw out a tweet today saying, and this is brilliant. I want this for her. Now, remember when Kevin McCarthy was running for Speaker and took him 15 times to get there? I said, look, I want this for him because I envisioned this coming. Chaos was never not the end result. So I said, look, I want him to wake up every morning with acid reflux and heartburn from knowing he's going to have to wake up and see, you know, the Matt Gaetzes and the rest of the kook caucus. And I want him to go to bed thinking about them. And I want him to have nightmares about them. And during the day, I want them to bump into each other in the hall. And that's what's happened. But now Marjorie Taylor Greene has given me a new hope. I want Donald Trump as Speaker. I think it's going to be, it's horrible for democracy, horrible for the country. It's going to be terribly destructive, bad thing. But she tweeted out today, if Trump becomes Speaker of the House chamber will be a Trump rally every day. Have you seen a Trump rally? Have you seen the insanity? Have you seen the craziness? She said it would be the House of MAGA. And here's the thing. If you weren't afraid of what we've been talking about for years now, an authoritarian dictatorship, a King Trump, a MAGA house would bring that. Now, evidently, Trump is going to visit the House Republicans. I haven't gotten the definitive answer yet, but there's a possibility he's going to Capitol Hill, you know, kind of talking. And he said, look, he's not going to be permanent Speaker, might do it for 90 days. He might give it a temporary part-time kind of thing, because that's how Trump does things. That's how Trump rolls. Only problem is, you know, going to have to change some rules. You know, those 91 indictments, minor impediment. But hey, nothing that the Republicans can't overcome. Now, the weird thing is, you know, the not in love with Trump crowd, they're going to have to say yes to him, which means death for them at home. So for me, I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Let's bring Trump in. Let's make sure that he is Speaker. Let's give him the gavel. Let's let him bloviate. Let's let him say all the crazy stuff he's been saying. And maybe the mainstream corporate controlled media, maybe they'll pay attention. Because they haven't been to this point. Nothing. And this is the part that bothers me. With all of the violent rhetoric that's been coming out of his mouth. You know, there was a piece over at the Washington Post today. You know, where he's saying, look, Trump's talking about extrajudicial killings, you know, that hasn't been covered by the mainstream media. You know, talking about, you know, he talked about, you know, when people loot that, you know, we should be able to just shoot people. And, you know, we should be shooting people and doing all this stuff. And the mainstream media didn't pick up on it. There was nothing. It just went. And I'll be honest, I let it go too, because I'll be honest, every crazy thing he says, I have to decide whether, is this something worth amplifying? Is this something worth giving attention to? Like a child. I mean, this is like a child. Do you give bad behavior attention? And our media has always given him all of the attention his ego has ever craved. And the thing is he's getting further and further off the fringe. He's getting further and further off the beaten path to get that attention, to get that fix. For instance, you know, he was interviewed by Hassan over at MSNBC. And this phrase he's used a couple of times. All these immigrants coming in, you know, nobody knows where they're coming from. Nobody knows if they were coming from prisons or mental health institutions or insane asylum. Nobody knows anything. Nobody knows if they're terrorists. Nobody knows anything. You know, playing on people's fears. He says, you know, it's very sad for our country. It's poisoning the blood of our country. It's poisoning the blood of our country. And look, rightly, everyone who paid attention to this is thinking, holy moly, that sounds a lot like 1930s Hitler rhetoric. Because it is. Now understand, you know, Trump says he's a student, kept the book right in his bedstand, evidently. Kept speeches in Hitler speeches in his nightstand. I don't know that that's nighttime reading, maybe in Trump world. But we're in this place where how do we handle this? Somebody who clearly wants violence, clearly wants the destruction of our social norms, the destruction of our institutions for their power, for their control, for their worldview. Democracy be damned. The Constitution that they talk about that they've never read, that be damned. It's about their power and their control. And ultimately, it comes down to wealth and money. So, you know, the more I look at this, the more I'm concerned. And while I'm kind of trying to make light of a Speaker Trump, because I think it would maybe be a shock to our system. Maybe Americans would start to pay attention. Maybe put down the American Idol and Cheetos or whatever it is that the bread and circus of today is. And maybe start paying attention to the reality that democracy is under attack. That the world that we grew up in, the America I grew up loving and wanting to defend, that America is going away quickly. And as the Harvard professor says, you know, right now, something's wrong. This is what it looks like when democracy is in trouble. This is it. Alarm bells should be going off in every freedom-loving American's head, because something is not right. And what's not right is we've got a Republican Party that seems to be in the pocket of a foreign dictator, seem to be doing the bidding of Putin. And somebody, and social norms be damned. History be damned. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I got a lot to get to, a lot to talk about. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
And look, with all of this chaos, we still haven't even talked about what's going to happen down the road. Government shutdown's coming quickly. What, 42 days now? We got 43 days until the next one, the next fear. And we've got no functional government. Nothing. Let's go to the phones. Got Steve on line one from Chicago. Steve, how are you today?
Yes, I'm fine. Well, in this case, it's Steve from Dallas. I'm in Dallas on business. And for anybody who doesn't travel very much, I mean, in this day and age, I would suggest getting out and about and seeing exactly what it is that's going on in your country, because this is very much a country that's divided. Every time I come down here to Dallas or Houston, I go out to Arizona, a few other places where I do business, you know, it's night and day from Chicago. or when I do business in New York, and I have an office in D.C., it is amazing the way in which people here think about what's going on in the world, because you would think that Joe Biden was, you know, Mao Zedong reincarnated if you talk to them. I mean, they literally believe that, you know, the federal government is going to kick in their door any day and take all of their guns. And that, you know, that their kid's slot at Texas A&M and UT is going to be taken by some Venezuelan immigrant. I mean, this is the level of crazy. But, you know, we didn't get here overnight. I mean, I would argue that, I mean, you can go back further, but in terms of the modern age, this starts with Ronald Reagan and the whole, you know, government is the problem, not the solution. And this is the birth of the modern neocons. And then they had their run until they crashed the economy in 2008 and 2009, at which point, you know, the populist part of the movement of conservatives in this country said, okay, who can we trust? We can't trust these people anymore. I mean, you know, they were promising us trickle-down economics. I'm still waiting for my money to trickle down.
Yep.
And then they crashed the economy. Well, along comes the populists, the Tea Party nuts.
The Buchanan
now
wing.
The Freedom Caucus. Yeah, exactly. So these are the wackos who you needed as a substitute for the people whose policies had failed. Of course, we, the sensible human beings on the planet, were always saying the same thing with regard to neocon trickle-down economics. It was ridiculous, and it was never going to work. And it'd be why? Because we actually have history to show us that it doesn't work. When the robber barons of the 19th century made their fortunes, and then, by the way, many of those fortunes were greater than anything that exists today when you control for inflation, they did not share that wealth. This idea that we're simply just going to share wealth. No, instead it was a race to the bottom, just like it's been a race to the bottom since the Reagan era. So now you have the populists, and of course, you know, they're a Frankenstein monster at the Republican Party. They're not the majority of Republicans, but they're enough of the Republican Party to where they hold sway over the party. And so now sensible Republicans can't govern, if there is such a thing. I would argue that, okay, I don't agree with Republicans, but there are some of them that I could work with. I could work with a Liz Cheney. I don't contend that I have anything in common with her in terms of policy, or Mitt Romney or Adam Kinzinger or others, but they were sane human beings who in the end would say that America comes first, and that, you know, that politics needs to end at the shore. And no matter what else happens in this country, that the survival of the republic comes first, before any human being, before any party, before any ideology. Today, no. Like, Donald Trump would be willing to burn down this country as long as he could be king of the ashes. And that's what we've come to. And unfortunately, it's going to take sensible people in the Republican Party, because I don't think we as Democrats or progressives, liberals, however you want to label us, we can't save them. They've got to save themselves. We can hope to get as many independents on our side with regard to elections and policies, but they need to save their own party because, as I've said before, this country does need two functional parties if it's going to survive.
Yep.
Because I don't agree with much of what Republicans have to say, but I do think that they represent a large cohort of voters in this country. And if those people don't feel that they're represented in government, that's very much problematic with regard to the potential for instability in society. So, yes, I mean, they need to save their party. I don't know exactly how they do it other than remaking it, saying, you know what, we just divest ourselves of the wackos, the Matt Gaetz, the Marjorie Taylor Greens, the Lauren Boberts, and, yes, of course, the Donald Trumps, and we go back to being the party that we used to be. At least in to the degree that, you know, we were common sense people and we knew that, you know, that destroying the country isn't a victory. That's like saying, you know what, you can win a nuclear war. No, you can't win a nuclear war.
No, I've said for years, you know, Republicans, take your party back somewhere near the Seine line. It's going to come back. It comes down to the voters. It comes down to people not buying into the kind of rhetoric. But sadly, what Trump says appeals to a large number of voters in this country. The kind of misogyny, the kind of homophobia, the kind of nationalism, that kind of stuff sells in Republican circles.
Yeah, well,
and our
problem is that...
Go ahead.
No, go right ahead.
I would argue on some on the left as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We have our fringe elements as well. And to be perfectly frank, going into 2024, given how important an election it is, if I had my way, I would, you know, put a muzzle on some of them. Just be quiet. You're not helping us in this election cycle. Okay, I understand that we're a party of a lot of voices, but, you know, we don't want to give them ammunition because we've got some fringe nuts. And then when they say open their mouths, then the Republicans latch onto that, and that becomes the talking point at Fox for a week, when that person does not represent the vast majority of Democrats in this country. And so, yes, I mean, we've got to do something about how people assimilate knowledge, because unfortunately, like I said, I travel. You can try and talk to these people as if you're using reason and rationality, logic, scientific methodology, asking them to look at research, asking them to look at the scholarship in these fields and the history of it. No. They have their own sources. Some of them are out and out right nuts with regard to where they're getting their information. And they believe this stuff. I mean, I have met people who believe that Donald Trump is still secretly running this country.
I know.
Yeah.
But yet it's Joe Biden's fault for the inflation.
Right, exactly. And I'm like, okay, so in other words, what do you take issue with, and would you then blame Donald Trump? Oh, they get confused on that one. You know, it's hard keeping up with the conspiracies, and I'm actually ashamed of myself that I find myself trying to keep up with this. Okay, so let me see. Donald Trump is going to parachute onto the White House lawn with JFK Jr., who isn't really dead, and they're going to take power and save the country.
Yeah, well, you're down there in Dallas. They were supposed to come back to Dealey Plaza. But, Steve, I appreciate the thoughts, man. Great stuff.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to Alice on line two. Alice, how are you today?
Somewhat insane.
So what's on your mind?
Not totally. What I wanted to say is this. We've really got some deep issues here. And as a society, we're going to have to make some very tough decisions. And here's what it comes down to. We have a minority rule by a bunch of, let's just flat out tell it like it is, lunatics who want to do nothing more than to destroy the Constitution, to destroy our nation, and set it up as some sort of weird biblical right-wing fascist paradise kind of deal. And we're going to have to really make some tough decisions, but instead we sit back and go, well, no, we can't do that because that would be against their rights. Obviously, what we need to do is say, okay, these people are right-wing terrorists and throw their hind ends in jail. But we won't do that because we don't want to offend the right wing, because they'll cry and they'll say how they're being picked on because they're Christians or Republicans or white. I mean, that's what it comes down to. But at some point, we're going to have to do this because here's the deal. If we don't, they're going to take over. And I can assure you, they're not going to worry about whether it's somebody's constitutional rights or not.
No, you got that right. Appreciate the thoughts, Alice.
So, have a good evening.
No, that's, you know, like I you, when you stop and think about where we're heading, and you listen to the rhetoric coming out of the right wing spin machine. And I spend a little time every day listening to the outrage factory on the right. And it's all about how horrible Joe Biden is and how everything's his fault. And you get into the real kook stuff. Then Trump's still running things. And, you know, it's amazing that we've gotten where we've gotten. And I blame the fact that we have a corporate control of our media that has gotten so large that there's no more local newspapers. There's very little local, trustable local news anymore. And the stuff that is, it's all bad. Because the moneyed interests don't want an informed, active, engaged populace. They want what they've got. They want people who are just smart enough to do the jobs, but not smart enough to realize they're getting screwed and divided and ready to eat each other at every opportunity. Scary, scary stuff. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, my good friend Sarah Burris is going to be here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. Back after this.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So big news. Got breaking news. This is actual big breaking news. Don't do this very often. Don't do the breaking news, hey, look at us kind of stuff. But this breaking, and that's why I brought in my good friend Sarah Burris. She's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. She has a big story. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us. What is the breaking news? What is the big story? What is this momentous, what is this thing?
Hey, so our favorite New York lawyer, Michael Cohen, woke me up from my afternoon nap and said, hey, guess what? Donald Trump dropped his $500 million lawsuit against me. And the thing that is so major about this is Trump has basically been running from a deposition since he filed this lawsuit in April. Like from the very beginning, he filed it in April and he goes, and by the way, we don't really want to do anything with this lawsuit until October. And it's like, that's not how that works.
No.
Like immediately you go, okay, let's do depositions. Let's go through with all of the court procedure, yada, yada, yada. They didn't want to do anything. And so Trump has kind of spent the last 6-7 months delaying and delaying and delaying until ultimately that's what happened, is he delayed it until October. Well, now the dude was supposed to give a deposition on Tuesday and he told the judge in Miami, oh my God, I cannot be there in Miami because I have to be in New York for this civil trial. You know, the civil trials are really important. I have to be there to, you know, uphold my name of my company and my family name and yada, yada, yada. And then he left. So basically it looks like he lied to the judge.
Yeah.
And so Trump was supposed to show up and give his deposition next, I think Monday. And so tonight he was just like, no, I'm dropping it. But Cohen just sent me a text message. He says, as I've said from the beginning, this case was nothing more than a retaliatory intimidation tactic and an attempt to hide from routine discovery procedures confirms as much. This is my favorite part. Mr. Trump's cowardly dismissal spells the end of this latest attempt to deter me from providing truthful testimony against him. Yay. My legal team and I now look forward to turning our full attention to holding Mr. Trump accountable for his latest abuse of the legal system. More to come.
Yeah.
So.
No, this is the thing that gets me. I mean, you know, I remember him filing that. And I remember going, you know, you're going to have to be deposed and there's going to be discovery. It's like yesterday I talked about Giuliani is suing President Biden because Biden said that he's Putin's puppet. Well, okay, now you're suing Biden. So his lawyers are going to comb
destroy
through.
Destroy you.
Exactly.
They will destroy him. And that's the thing, is like, then you'll end up having all of this information that could prove that Giuliani really was Putin's puppet. Like, it could end up working out in Biden's favor.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what happened here with this Cohen case, is it's like, dude, Cohen has spent years and years with this man, working with this man, and now suddenly he has an opportunity to have his lawyers ask questions under oath about things that he as a lawyer could not discuss.
Yeah.
And now suddenly it would, oops, be in the public record from the court documents. And of course he wasn't going to get deposed. I mean, it's just the stupidest thing in the world, but he has gone on with this, you know, for months. And that's the thing that Trump does, right? Is he sues people to intimidate them and forces them to pay months and months of legal fees and then drops it out of the blue and is like, okay, we're done here. But the thing is now it sort of feels like the turnaround is fair play with Trump. Now he's the one who really has to deal with all of these lawsuits and all of these legal fees. And, you know, it's got to, like, he's starting to run out of cash.
Yeah, no, it's starting to catch up with him. Now, Will, you go back to your little text machine and ask Cohen if he's going to sue for legal expenses for a frivolous lawsuit. Because can you just file a lawsuit? They go, oh, well, we changed our mind. Yeah, no harm, no foul. Can you do that?
That is a good question, because sorry, I was actually doing it as you were saying, sue for legal expenses.
Yeah, let's see if we get a response back on that, because, you know,
right?
Because it's always been my view that you file these, you better go through with it.
And Florida in particular, the thing is that they have the frivolous lawsuit laws too. I don't know what their slap suits are necessarily, but already there was the lawsuit that Trump lost when he sued Hillary Clinton and like 500 other people, you know. And he what's her name, his other lawyer, du jour, got fined like a ton of cash. I think it was almost $1 million.
Yeah, so, look, every you know, I think it was Rick Wilson who said that everything Trump touches dies.
Yes.
Or everyone Trump touches goes broke. Because today, the beautiful statement today, Mike Lindell, broke. We've lost everything, every dime. It's all gone. All of it, he said. Those are his words. We've lost everything. Every dime, all of it is gone. His lawyers are bailing on him, and he's still being sued by what? $1.3 billion by Dominion. Smartmatic is going after him for a huge amount of money. That guy, he better come up with a new gimmick besides a pillow and slippers.
Yeah, because basically it's going to end up being Smartmatic brings you pillows at the end of this thing. So Cohen responded, and so I said, "Are you going to sue him for legal expenses?" And he goes, "Look at the last sentence of my quote, which is more to come." So pretty sure that's an indication of yes.
There's your answer. And the thing is, you know, the judge, you know, and looking at what the judge did, you know, with Trump, you know, having to disclose all of the LLCs, basically lay everything out. I mean, do we now find out he's not as rich as he said he was, and he doesn't own half of what he claims he owns? And do we now find that it was all just a con, that all of it, that some of us believed it was from the beginning?
Exactly. Like, that's the thing, is I feel like we spent the first like year of the campaign and first year of his presidency digging through all of these financial documents, and none of it really made sense to folks who cover this kind of economic issues. And right. For the biographers like Tim O'Brien and David K. Johnston, they're like, y'all, we've been doing this for like decades. He ain't got no money. Interesting, it's one of the funny things that of all people, Joy Behar in The View talks about, is she's like, you know, he didn't hate Rosie O'Donnell until she started questioning his wealth. The second she started questioning his wealth, it was like, you know, he was on her. And that was the genesis of their feud.
Can you do that again?
Rare.
but here's the thing, and this is this is the serious question then, because I've been saying from the beginning he's been a con man. I've believed he's been a con man all along. You've heard all of the stories back in 2015 and 16 about all the people that he stiffed, you know, the bankruptcies, all this stuff. Will it matter to the faithful? I mean, is there an epiphany? Is there a light bulb moment? Do you think for some that they go, oh, I was conned? Do you think that's possible?
I don't know. I mean, we were talking a little bit before the show about cultism, and the way that Cohen talks about, you know, living life under the world of Donald Trump is it's a lot like a cult, where you have this this personality, this you know, this God that you're following around like an evangelical pastor. And, you know, it's that Joel Osteen kind of thing, and people flock to it. And so I don't know. I mean, it's the same thing with him. Like, he, you know, obviously has his private jets and all of his fancy lifestyle, and he probably has more money than Donald Trump does too. And in the end, people don't, that doesn't deter them from him. I think what will change is one of my favorite things that happened today. My favorite piece of news, other than this, obviously, was Representative Moskowitz filed or sent a letter to the Palm Beach County appraiser.
Yep.
And said, hey, I don't know if you noticed, but Donald Trump has been saying that his Mar-a-Lago property is worth like $1.5 billion. You assessed it at something else. Is it possible that maybe he should be paying a hell of a lot more in property taxes?
And look, I said that from the beginning. if these properties are worth what he says they're worth, why isn't he paying taxes out the wazoo on them?
Yes.
As any one of us would be.
And the thing is if you look at all of those documents, whenever his property taxes went up, based on the assessment, his lawyers were, you know, his accountants and his lawyers were on it fast. They were just like, oh no, we dispute this. Mar-a-Lago isn't worth whatever it was that you said it was. It's actually worth a lot less. So our property taxes are going to be a lot less. And so it's like it's exactly what the lawsuit in New York is about.
Right.
Where he's playing this game of, you know, it's cheaper here, it's more there.
But here's the thing, and I'm going to defend him a little bit, because rich people get away with this all the time. This is
they
a
do.
Rich group. This is a rich people thing. And the thing that infuriates me is, you know, people would defend Trump. Well, he's just smart. No, no. This is what rich people get away with all the time. Trump has exposed it, and good for him. Thank goodness Trump has put himself out there to be exposed as the fraud that he is and the cheat that he is, so that maybe we can deal with it. You know, for me, you know, the thing that came out of this trial was his defense. And maybe you'll think it's as important as I do. He says, I can't overinflate my properties because I can always go to the Saudis and get what I want. And I'm going, wait a second. How is that possible?
Yeah.
And then what are you giving the Saudis so that they're giving you whatever you want?
Yeah. I mean, that's where this sort of goes from just a regular everyday rich dude who's bilking the system to, holy crap, did he just reveal that he has some sketchy relationships with the Saudi government and that they owe him money for stuff?
Yes, yes. But here's the thing. We find out today. This is another one of those things. And I go back to something I've said a million times in the Trump era. Think about everything we know about Donald Trump. Think about everything that we've heard, all of the horrible stories, all of the, you know, those soldiers are suckers and losers. And, you know, think about all of that stuff. And then imagine all the stuff we don't know.
Yeah.
So this story comes out today that, you know, he's with this Australian billionaire and he's leaning in and whispering and telling him about our nuclear subs. And, you know, my mind goes to this place of, you know, are there any people working in Mar-a-Lago who aren't on some foreign country's, intelligence payroll somewhere? Aren't spies for some foreign intelligence agency? Because national secrets are laying on tables in the bathrooms. He's whispering to people in the ballroom about our nuclear capacity. Really?
Here's the thing, though. They don't even have to have their spies, you know, placed in there as employees. They can just have some rando pay $200,000 for a Mar-a-Lago membership and then pal around with him all the time and, you know, be make friends with him and, you know, get him a little lubed up and be like, hey, you want some pie? You know, you want to chat about nuclear secrets? Like, you know, I mean, it's just, it's so absurd, but that's really what was happening. And we suspected as much, but now it really seems like he's kind of just dangling it out there for everyone to see.
Yeah, what kind of pie?
One of the things, right. I'm sure he eats a lot of pie. I'm sure he probably eats the fried pies from McDonald's. Right. They don't have the actual fried one anymore, do they? They do the baked ones. Anyway, so the thing that I found the most interesting today is the you made me lose my train of thought. Dang you. What were we talking about?
Spies at Mar-a-Lago. On the foreign payrolls.
Oh, the thing that we found out today in, I think, one of the filings from Trump's lawyers in Miami for the classified documents case, because they're complaining about how there's no secure facility for them to read stuff and that's delaying things and yada, yada. One of the things that I didn't know is that there are three documents that he had that are so secret that he can't even view them at a secure facility. He can only view them in Washington, D.C. And at that point, your mind is just reeling about what on earth was this document?
Yeah.
You know, what were these things? What were they saying? And who was he giving them to?
No, and this is the thing. You know, I go back to this story with this Australian billionaire. You know, how many times has this happened? How
yeah.
many people has he, you know, to butter up or to, you know, to try and, you know, you know, get some kind of favor with? Has he just let stuff out? Or, you know, he doesn't even care that it's top secret or classified because it doesn't matter to him. He's just blurting stuff out. This is why you don't give guys like that the nuclear football. You just don't do it. You don't give them the code. You don't do it.
How many people are he, like, is he telling Mike Lindell this stuff? And is Mike Lindell then calling up, you know, the Russians being like, hey, I'm in this bad lawsuit with Smartmatic and I need some money.
Yeah,
I mean, here's the secret I can give you.
But yet I hear the right wing, you know, outrage machine going on about, well, you know, Donald Trump was, you know, he was tough on Putin. You know, we know he's got stuff on Putin. You go, really? I think it's the other way around. I think Putin's got stuff on a lot of Republicans. Or why else would they be doing his bidding? I don't know if you saw the statement recently that he basically said the, you know, the war would end in a week if they could cut off access to Western weapons, because they're almost out of weapons. So you see the Republicans in the House going, no, we're going to cut off aid to Ukraine. I don't know. There seems like kind of a quid pro quo there.
It does. It sort of seems like Putin is just writing the press releases for them at this point. And people like Ron Johnson, especially, you know, it's exactly like you say, what do they have on Ron Johnson? What the heck was he doing in Russia whenever he was visiting with Putin there? You know, what videos do they have? Stay away from that vodka, man.
So let me ask you, with all the craziness in the house and all of the fun and entertainment, day two of no speaker vacation, evidently now it's going to be retribution and vengeance. They threw Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer out of their offices. Now they're going after Matt Gaetz. They're going to cawthorn Matt Gaetz, which couldn't happen to a better person. In fact, you know, we can change the cawthorn to Gaetz when he's gone. Any thoughts on what we're going to see coming, what the fun and entertainment's going to be?
So one of the first things that I thought when all of this was going down with Matt Gaetz is I was like, you know, if John Boehner was there, Matt Gaetz would have been gone a long time ago. He would probably be in jail by now. Just because that's sort of the way that Boehner worked, is he would, if he didn't like somebody, he would find information about them out. And what was that one guy out of Illinois that had the like sketchy real estate deals? He got rid of that guy really fast. And really, it's because Boehner was secretly basically passing around different pieces of opposition research to progressive news people.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, how he got rid of folks. I don't think McCarthy, I can't decide if McCarthy either didn't care or if he's so aligned with Matt Gaetz that he actually supported half of the stuff that Matt Gaetz wanted.
Yeah.
Because that's the weird thing, is he's been kind of a nutter for a long time, and he's only been forced to moderate because it's just bad for him in PR terms.
Yeah. So last question. Speaker Trump, yes or no?
So here's the thing. Is
a MAGA rally every day. It would be a MAGA rally every day, according to Marjorie Three Names. It would be the House of MAGA. Think about it. Could be fun. Could be entertaining.
Rule 26 of the Republican rules say you can't be the speaker if you've been indicted.
They can change that.
They can change it.
I've got it on good authority. Real simple. They could change it. They wanted to. If they really wanted to, they could change it.
They could. They'd have to elect a speaker, change the rules, fire that speaker, and then elect Donald Trump.
Well, they got a temporary one. They got the bow tie wearing Wall Street.
Yeah. Bucket. The only action that he can take is he can hold a vote for a new speaker. There's no other thing that he can do.
Well, we will see. We'll see how this, we'll see what happens. But you know, I'm pushing for it. I want Speaker Trump. I think it would be a good thing for the Republican Party. Best thing they could do for themselves.
It's kind of the burn it all down.
Yep.
Method where it's just like, here, let me just shove you off that cliff that you're standing on.
The dumpster's on fire. Let me just push it into the ocean.
Yeah, kind of. It really is. And you can just burn and drown out there by yourself. Have fun.
I was just going with drown, but you got the burn and drown. All right. Sarah, as always, great stuff. Thank you for the breaking news. I'll look forward to talking to you back here next time.
Oh, thank you. Have a good day tomorrow.
You as well. Our good friend Sarah Burris. Make sure you check out their website, rawstory.com. Find all the incredible work that she does. And I'm sure the breaking news. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1945. That was a day known in Hollywood as Black Friday. After World War II, the movie industry began to rake in profits. But they did not pass those profits along to their employees. 10,000 members of the Conference of Studio Unions were on strike. They were part of the Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners. They were also in a jurisdictional battle with the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, or IATSE, over who should represent stage decorators. The strike wore on for half a year. The studios had more than 100 films backlogged and were able to wait out the strikers. But as the strike continued and the studios remained silent, pressure mounted. Despite the tensions between the two unions, thousands of IATSE members refused to cross the picket lines. On Black Friday, the strikers decided to concentrate their efforts at the Warner Brothers Studios gate. 300 picketers gathered to hold the line. Scabs, hired by Warner Brothers, tried to drive through the workers' picket lines to the studio. Variety accounted what happened next, writing, quote, "Strikers deployed from their barricades, halted non-strikers, and rolled three automobiles on their sides." By noon, reinforcements arrived from both sides. Firemen were called in to turn their hoses on the striking workers. Warner Brothers security deployed tear gas. Common for the time, accusations were hurled that the Conference of Studio Union Strikers were communists. As a result of the strike, the Conference of Studio Union's employees were assigned to other jobs in the studios. When they refused, they were locked out. The union never recovered. The violence at the Warner Brothers Studios gate also helped to fuel the passage of the Taft-Hartley Act through Congress, which eroded union protections. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I mean, stop and think about it for a second. You know, all of the classified documents that found its way to Mar-a-Lago, all of the stories that we already know of Trump, you know, just telling stories, just being Trump, just being the good golf buddy. You know, trying to endear himself to his companion. And, you know, hey, you know, see, this is one of those things that I said from the beginning about the classified documents, and I still believe this. I know a lot of people say, no, no, he was going to sell them. No, he was going to do all this stuff. I don't know. I don't think so. Maybe I'm not ruling it out, but I think it's much simpler than that. I think it's, hey, look what I have. Look how important I am. Look at me. It's all about his, it's always been about his ego. It's always been a love fest about him. These rallies are all to feed his ego. It's not about the people in the crowd. Could care less about them. It's about his ego. And having these classified documents, having things that nobody else has, that's an aphrodisiac. That's his ED medicine that he snorts. You know, like Matt Gaetz, according to Mark Wayne Mullen. Don't know if he did it or not, according to Mark Wayne Mullen, allegedly. Save myself from being sued. But, you know, this is one of those things where him having all of this information is dangerous to national security. And we've not had this in any other president throughout history, that we were concerned that, you know, in his business dealings, you know, it might be, it might be a good sales thing. You know, if you've ever had lunch with a really slippery salesperson, you know how they like to build themselves up. That's how I see Trump. And are you surprised that he does this? No, I'm not surprised at all. Were you surprised that there were classified documents laying around on the table at a reception? No, of course not. He's careless. He's reckless. He's all of those things. Now, what the right, what the MAGA crowd will tell you is that's what they love about him. He's unpredictable. He's dangerous. Yeah, he's dangerous, all right. Dangerous to our national security. Because as I was thinking about this, you go, I wonder how many of our intelligence assets around the world have been murdered because of his loose lips. Because we'll never know. We'll never know how many CIA agents or you know people around the world, because they don't publish their names. There's just a star on the wall somewhere with no name attributed to it. It's just a story. Oh, someone was killed in a car accident on vacation. How many people has his incompetence and his narcissism, how many people have lost their lives because of it? So for all of those flag-waving, Jesus-loving, God-fearing American patriots, ask yourself that question.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So with all the craziness going on, and look, you know, we've got a house that's on fire, it's hard to focus on anything else, but the reality is we still have to focus on how do we move our economy forward and make it to where it works for average, everyday working people. And look, as I've said, you know, we've got a Republican Party hell-bent on chaos. A shutdown is not too long down the road. No functional house to head that off. You know, we got lots of problems. And a big part of that is, well, we've got an economy that seems rigged against average, everyday working people. That's why I've asked our good friend Kat Hadley to come talk with us. She's the director of the Great Economy Project. AmericanAgenda.com is their website. They're out there doing the education work of getting people to understand there is a possible better way. There are other alternatives. This isn't the only alternative. We can do better. Kat, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here again.
So where are we? What are we doing? What's the good news so far? I know you're out in Wisconsin. You're out in North Carolina. You're coming to Pennsylvania. What's going on?
So we have a lot going on. We just wrapped our education portion in Wisconsin, and out of our cohort, over 98% of people decided to stay and work on advocacy. And so how our program works is that we go in and we give people our view of the economy that is pretty much that it's rigged against the working class, that the wealthy aren't paying their fair share in taxes, and that there should be a livable minimum wage for everybody. So we talk about those issues. We bring in experts. And then we basically say, do you want to stay and help us work on these issues? So it's really great to see that in North Carolina and now in Wisconsin, we get these massive response rates to stay on and do something. So in Wisconsin, you're going to see some people start really moving and shaking on this issue, especially the minimum wage piece on the state level in Wisconsin. We're going to be back for training soon. And in North Carolina, that's looking like people, you know, testifying in front of the House and the North Carolina House about different things. And they're at different fairs just talking to their fellow citizens about these issues and trying to make a difference. And then on November 1st, we're going to be launching in Pennsylvania. We'll be in Mount Pleasant. So anyone's welcome to come out. It's totally free. You get free dinner. You get to learn about stuff. We have door prizes. It's real fun. So come out if you can.
No, that would be great. You know, what you're doing is what I've been saying, you know, for years has to be done. Activating, educating, engaging voters, getting people, you know, to take ownership. To, you know, democracy, they say, is participatory. This is how you participate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for a lot of these people, because we go to smaller towns, you know, we specifically target around 5,000 person towns, because the idea is if one person knows, 20 other people know. If you're a small town person, you might know that very well. What I love about this job is really showing people like you have a voice and that voice matters. And sure, this is going to be hard work and we might not get there overnight, but politics is one of those things, like once you turn on to politics, it's really, you know, like that's it. Like that's how I fell into political work was, yep. You know, seeing a problem and realizing, oh, somebody should say something about this. And
understanding that you can make change. I mean, you know, we've been sold on this idea that you can't fight City Hall, that, you know, the big moneyed interest, you know, they control everything. And I say, look, you know, sure, they've got all the money, but we've out-procreated them. There are more of us. We can vote. We can, while we still can, because I fear we're heading towards a period where maybe we might not be all able to vote. But while we still can, we still have the ability to outvote the moneyed interest.
Yeah. Well, and I always tell people, you know, a lot of my friends, I'm 35. And so there's a lot of younger folks that I hang out with. And I always tell them when they're like, well, this is hopeless and I'm walking away. I try to challenge that as like, who do you think benefits when we think this way? Who's benefiting from us just saying, okay, well, it's too hard, so we're walking away. And then also as somebody that's done a lot of activist work, I did food stamp expansion in Michigan when it was Republican controlled and won on everything we were fighting for there. I've done childcare expansion on campuses, all types of stuff. And the thing is, you can win and you can fight City Hall. And I have, it's hard work, but you can do it. So yeah, I just always think about who's benefiting from when we feel like nothing can happen. Cause it's rarely the people doing the good work.
And you guys, you focus on one of my most important issue. And it's not the sexy issue that, you know, everyone gets all riled up about, but our tax code is so badly rigged. The game is so badly rigged that the wealthy and the powerful get all the benefits. And, you know, I think George Carlin said it the best, you know, the rich get all the money, do none of the work. The middle class does all of the work, pays all the taxes, and the poor are there to scare the hell out of the middle class. So they keep showing up to the jobs. That pretty much sums up our economy.
Yeah. And if we even have a middle class at this point, you know, I mean, we have one, but it's a sliver of, you know, when I was a kid, you know, there was a solid middle class. You know, I live in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where I think we're like pre-pandemic, we were the eighth most economically segregated city in the United States. And there's no way it hasn't gotten a lot worse. And, you know, the only people I know that still live around here, because I worked in food service for a long time. I was like a high school dropout, went to school a lot later. But like the only people I know are people that maybe got a house, something like that, you know? And I think it's sad because it impacts our cities and our worlds and our communities. But you know, the other thing too there is that we, you know, this economy is not working for anyone. And once you really break into that tax code, it's sickening how rigged it is. And just America deserves a lot better. And so that's really what we're trying to tell people is you know, I think in America, there's a big onus on personal responsibility. So you may feel like the system is rigged, but you feel like at some point I made this mistake and now I'm in this financial situation. But the reality is, you know, I meet people say like, well, maybe I want to be a millionaire someday. And I just, you know, I tell them, I'm like, the way our economy is headed, I'm not going to lie to you. That probably will never happen for you. You know, it won't happen for me either, but you know, we have to fix this system because it ties into all of our other stuff. If we have the wealthy paying their fair share, what will the world look like? You know, and one thing we try to challenge people on when we talk about a living wage, because people get, you know, have ideas and there's been a lot of propaganda around minimum wage. One thing I ask people is like, what if, you know, Richland Center had a $20 minimum wage? What would that look like for your community? And people start thinking about not just who's impacted, but the whole city. Like, what does that look like? Because that means more small business. That means better everything. All of our systems are being paid into. I mean, everyone benefits when we do these things, when we raise the wage.
No, this is why I think the fight with the big three and the UAW is so important. You're mm-hmm. talking about sharing the profits of labor in a more equitable fashion so that it does actually trickle down like it used to when my grandparents were alive. Not since we've been trickling down, but before pre-trickle down, before they told us things would trickle down, it actually did. Once they said, hey, it'll trickle down, it kind of stopped. But you're right. We paid into Social Security. We paid into unemployment. We paid into Medicare. The more people earned, the more taxes they paid to the local government so that you got more services. The machinery was working better when people had higher wages. And we're able to pay higher taxes. And that is not a bad thing.
No. And I think, you know, it's like, imagine what our communities can be when people can afford to do things. And I will say, you know, I'm a library board, proud elected Ann Arbor Library Board trustee in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And our library was able to unionize and they were able to talk about, you know, like how having a living wage is so important there because so many people can't even afford to live in the city and have to travel in, you know, and how does that impact things like climate change? I mean, these things are all connected. So I think it's, you know, well, there are tons of priorities we can look into. A living wage is massive. And then it's just somebody that worked on minimum wage. And this was back 10 years ago. But I remember working the hardest hours of my life, like 40, 60 hours on my feet, just coming home exhausted and not being able to pay rent. And that's there's no dignity in that. And I truly do believe like America's worth fighting for, and America where people can pay their bills is the America that I believe in. So that's why I do this work.
No, that's spot on. You know, I say every time a new president comes into office, it's my hope that they will be the one who returns reward to work. And Joe Biden has been that guy for me so far. All the things that he has done with the Department of Labor, the National Labor Relations Board, the talk and the support for workers, that is incredibly important. If only we had a House of Representatives capable of passing some kind of legislation that could make organizing easier and could help an actual push to rebuild our middle class. Boy, would that be something. Instead, we've got a giant chaos show of children running amok. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Kat Hadley. Kat is the director of the Great Economy Project. AmericanAgenda.com is the website that you can check out the work that they do. Let's go back to this for a minute because, I love the work that you guys are doing. And in fact, in North Carolina, you went into a small town, Whiteville, right?
Yep, Whiteville, North Carolina.
And you went in there, red hat, blue hat, didn't matter. Right, left, didn't matter. Democrat, Republican, didn't matter. It's about the issue. And as I say, the frame is not red hat, blue hat, it's hard hat. We've got to rebuild this country. And that's what I love about what you guys are doing. That it's not about, which team you're on. It's about how do we make lives better. And I think if we did more of that, maybe I'm just, being overly optimistic, maybe we would actually accomplish some things.
Yeah. I mean, I think that when we focus on the issue, and this is the thing, I think that as somebody that I've done a ton of across the aisle work, and people always ask me, especially when they're on one extreme side or the other, like, how do you get them to talk to you? And I'm like, I talk to them like they're human beings. And I talk about my issue passionately. And I think that, for the most part with this thing, people feel this like to their core. They've felt the decline of their financial power. They felt that shrink. And so when you come in and you kind of disarm them by saying, listen, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. I don't want to talk to you about any of this other stuff. I want to talk to you about money, and I want to talk to you about solutions we think we have, and we want to see if you're interested in helping us. And I think when you do that, people are willing to listen, at least hear you out. You know, they don't always 100% agree, but often they do. And, it also creates a system where, we have in North Carolina, the two women that run the program there. I mean, they're like our biggest helpers down there. One's a Republican and one's a Democrat, and they work together all the time. And we're in a group chat, and it goes beyond, I just think we've gotten so far away from each other. And I think there's valid reasons for that. And I'm not going to discount some of those reasons. I understand some of them. But I think when we can learn ways to talk to each other, that's just really important and really special. And so I'm really grateful to be a part of that. And you see it again in Wisconsin, and hopefully we're seeing it again in PA. And so it does bring me some hope that people are willing to, and you see people willing to help others. We have people in the program that are making good money, but they realize, my neighbor isn't, and I want them to be okay, or my community could be better because of this. And so they get involved. And so that's excellent to see.
No, isn't that the story of America, supposedly? Is that what we're led to believe is supposed to happen?
Yeah. I mean, and I think it still can, but it's scary, and I think, in North Carolina, we had Brittany go and test. She was one of our original cohort members, and she went to testify because, they passed this new law she went to protest against it and to make a comment against it. But with the redistricting maps, that you can't FOIA anything they're talking about. And so she went and just talked about how this will impact advocacy because, where's the control lever for any accountability with any political power when politicians are writing the maps and, they're the ones in charge of these things? And then to counteract that FOIA law, they're also saying we're going to, start this gov ops program where we can investigate whoever we want. I mean, on the state level, there's some really scary things happening on a national level. So I think having these people come together and say, hey, wait a minute, this is something I don't really normally pay attention to, but I know this will impact us and I want to fight back against it. Like, that's, I think, just really important to have going on in general, from both sides of the aisle. We got to hold these politicians accountable on both sides.
Yeah, no, to unpack what you just said, because I want to make sure that the gravity of what you just said is gotten, yeah. That you cannot file a Freedom of Information Act on what they're doing. So there's no way to have any oversight by citizens over what our elected officials are doing in North Carolina. And they're setting up basically a secret police force to be able to go after any advocacy group. So basically your citizen lobbying could be, well, criminalized.
Yeah. And that's horrifying, right? Like, I mean, and just like, this is, it's, you know, and there's no, we need people to be running for office to be aware of these things, you know? And I think that the scare tactics, you know, and they already exist. Like when you go to make public comment, everything's intimidating and it's all on purpose, right? Yeah. And so, you know, what we're trying to really tell people is, you know, this is your government too. You know, whenever I get upset about stuff, which is often, but you know, it's also like, this is also our country and I'm not going to let them get away with this. They can try, they can pass legislation, but I'm still going to be here and I'm always going to fight back against this because I do love America. And I think this is absolutely corrupt and wrong. And I think that it's worth fighting for, goes back to that limit when we say, well, there's nothing that can be done now. There absolutely is stuff that can be done. Is it going to be hard? Yeah, but it's still worth doing. You know, North Carolina is worth fighting for. Pennsylvania is worth fighting for. Michigan is worth fighting for. Every state is worth it. And Amen. The people are worth it.
Amen. AmericanAgenda.com, the website. We'll get links out on social media. Kat Hadley, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Love to have you come back, especially when you come to Pennsylvania, and share with us what's going on there. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Kat is the director of the Great Economy Project. Again, AmericanAgenda.com, the website. Quick break, right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people on the talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, rich guy, Jim Justice, governor of West Virginia, running for Senate, oddly enough. Evidently, the federal marshals have been instructed to seize a 2009 Bell helicopter that belongs to a company owned by Jim Justice and his family because, I guess, unpaid debts. And this is one of those this is one of those weird kind of things where you go, another one of the rich guys showing us how they evade paying taxes. You know, he doesn't own the helicopter. His company does. But he gets to use it whenever he wants. And this is one of those things that as working people, we don't really quite grasp. So when the, you know, the rich dad, poor dad guy says, you know, rich people don't pay taxes, he's not lying. He's being very honest. You know, when Donald Trump said, you know, I'm smart, I don't pay taxes, you know, he's being honest. They're going to screw the system every chance they can because they lobby for it. They spend a lot of money to rig the game so that they benefit. And as I said the other day, you know, my grandfather always said, if a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it, because they get return on investment. They know that the couple of thousand dollars that they hand out in campaign donations is going to come back to them in multiples because the tax code has been rigged so badly. And this has always been one of my main issues, because I think if you have a more fair economic distribution, if your work and your labor is compensated fairly and you make a decent living, a lot of our problems begin to go away. If we don't have gazillionaires who have such outweighed power that, well, they can take on we the people, I think you have a different society. But what we've done is we've, Reagan forward, we've rigged the game to allow the very wealthy and powerful to get away with whatever they want. Which is why this thing with Trump is so important. Why the fact that, you know, the Justice Department and our justice system is going after a former president because of all of the crimes. And I remember back in 2015, I talked about this extensively because we had a bunch of people on over that year who had been screwed over by Trump and his businesses. We had contractors who came and said, you know, we did all this work, and, you know, they basically stiffed us and then sued us and, you know, offered us pennies on the dollar, and we had to take it because they would just tie us up in litigation. That was his MO. And it was amazing to me that anybody would actually work for the guy. But it was one of those things where you didn't know about it until he came out, because there was always gag orders and there was always threats of being sued if you told anyone, because that's what rich people do. And that's what, you know, someone like Trump did. And I remember going, you know, I don't know why this guy's throwing his name into the ring. At some point, all of this stuff has to come out. Now, again, you know, I go back to 2015 with my 2015 brain, thinking that the American people were the people that I thought they were, you know, in 2012 or 2008 or 2004, that the kind of scandal, the kind of corruption, the kind of graft that we saw out of him would turn people off. But oddly enough, in 2016, it actually turned people on. It actually got people to go, yeah, he's a smart businessman. He knows how to game the system. He's going to do it for us. And I don't know how you made that turn. You know, I get, okay, he's a smart business guy who knows how to screw people over and screw the system and benefit himself. I get that. Completely understand that. I don't know how you make this turn that it's somehow going to benefit the rest of us. I'm still mind blown at that magic trick, at that act of mental gymnastics that you would think that this guy who has never shown any inclination of helping anybody but himself, magically, overnight, coming down an escalator, now makes him benevolent. It's really quite curious to me. And maybe if we still have the ability to think freely in 50 years, maybe if we're not a fascistic dictatorship in 50 years, maybe they'll write about this era. And maybe they'll have a better answer. Because I'm, you know, I get the idea that, like my family, they believed that the jobs were going to come back. They believed that, you know, they were going to recreate those union jobs and that, even though there was no basis for that whatsoever, other than, you know, the analogy I always use is, you know, a drowning man, when you throw him an anchor, will reach for it, because it's, who knows, potentially could help. So I find it very interesting that this is where we are. Also very interesting, and this is where everything that Trump has ever touched, everybody who's touched it has been burned. And just look at the wake of misery that he's left. The fact that Mike Lindell, who I guess at one point someone said was a billionaire, has lost it all. It's all gone. Gone. That to me just remarkable. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your podcast, you will find ours. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I was reading a story over at the Ohio Capital Journal, and they're talking about how the Ohio governor and Republicans in Ohio are about ready to major overhaul of the Ohio education system, going after the Department of Education there, going after the State Board of Education, basically hatchet job, major overhaul, they said. Now, a judge said, hold the phone. There's a restraining order because they want more. Slow this down a little bit. Governor's saying, no, we're going. And his response was, there's certainly a potential for chaos. No, I think that's what they want is chaos. Because I believe, and I still believe this to my core, the goal is always destroy public education. That's what happens when these people get their fingers on the education system. It's all about destruction. And I look at, states like Iowa, who are doing their foolhardy best to destroy what was once, the gold standard in American public education. And here to share some thoughts on just how bad things are in the state of Iowa, I've asked our good friend J.D. Scholten to come talk with us. He's an Iowa state representative. J.D., thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me back on. And it's absolutely despicable to see where we're at in public education here in Iowa compared to where we were. When I graduated high school, we were first in the nation in education, and now we're at best middle of the pack. And now we passed school vouchers, and where I live in Sioux City, Iowa, our school board said that it's an automatic 8% cut to public education because of that. And you look at the majority of rural schools, they don't have an option to send their kids somewhere else to a private school. And so it's so frustrating to see what the Republicans and what this governor is doing to such a strong foundation and such a pride that we had when it came to public education.
And the thing for me, JD, is they're not even trying to hide it anymore. I mean, before right. It used to be, we want to give people an opportunity. We want to give poor people a chance. And now they're just right out in front. They are full hearty. We want to destroy public education.
Right. And what we're seeing here, to me, public education is the great equalizer. It doesn't matter your background, doesn't matter the zip code that you grew up in. You have a chance to better your life because of public education. And so that's why I'm so passionate and why we shouldn't be so passionate about funding public education. But it's absolutely ridiculous. And what we're seeing here in the state of Iowa is that the majority of kids who were the rich kids who were already going to private school, they're the ones who are going to get a lot of the money. And it's not going to the poor kids or anything like that. It's so frustrating that this is just another example of
it's a windfall.
The wealthy are going to continue to have breaks while the working class gets left behind.
Yeah, but that's not new. That's always been the gig, because the vouchers, and I still remember, when before Mike Fulmer got into trouble here in Pennsylvania, he was advocating a voucher bill. And I remember asking him, going, look, the Abington Friends School in Philadelphia is about, $40,000 a year for kindergarten. If I get one of these golden tickets, if I get one of your vouchers, I get one of these golden tickets, can I send my kid to Abington Friends School and will it cover? Oh, yeah, it covers all the costs and transportation. The answer is no, it doesn't. It covers what my school district would have paid for my kid to go to that school, which is about $12,000 or $13,000. I don't have the other $27,000 to make up. So it was just a windfall for people who were already sending their kids there.
And that's what we're seeing in Iowa, is the majority of private schools up their cost this year because they were only charging $3,000, and now they can get up to $7,000. So they doubled their prices.
Yep.
So then in the state of Iowa, we're not allowed to audit the system. It was the most fiscally irresponsible bill Iowa has ever seen, because we don't know if it's going to be positive and negative. There's no reporting on it, no auditing. And then you look at down in Florida where you see like the parents are buying like PS5s and just
big screen TVs. Nothing.
Right. It's a joke. And when that money could be spent to help the communities and investing in public education where every kid has a chance to succeed.
You know, I said the other day on the show that, you know, the push had always been to destroy public education. And I know people years ago, and I've been talking about this for at least a decade now, that the goal, especially for the homeschool community, would be to, hey, you know, we pump out a bunch of kids, especially the quiverful folks. We punch out a bunch of kids and the school pays us to homeschool them because, you know, the money that they get, every kid gets, comes in a backpack. So if you go to a charter school, you go to a private school, you go to a homeschool, it gets paid to that entity. I've now taken it to the next step of going, because we're destroying child labor laws, that now we're going to take that money, not for homeschooling, but because work will eventually be considered education, we're going to pay employers to abuse children as cheap labor, and that will be the wet dream wish list item of the year for corporate America.
I mean, child labor is absolutely disgusting, and to see what happened in this spring, both the child labor law that was here in Iowa, but even before that, the federal report from the Department of Labor that said, I think it was over 12 meatpacking plants in 8 different states. There's over 100 kids working night shifts and overnight shifts as cleaners, and absolutely just disgusting. You know, these kids should be in school. They shouldn't be working overnight shifts. And, but like collectively, I think the whole, the report ended up showing that collectively they only got fined about $1 million. So to these companies that are making billions of dollars, these monopolies, these huge multinational corporations that have a stranglehold of our agricultural system, and just to slap them with $1 million fine, they'll pay that in a heartbeat and do it all over again the next month.
Yeah, see, I can solve our child labor problems in one single page piece of legislation, and I wouldn't fine anybody a dime. You would never pay a fine in my world. But if a child gets, you have any child labor violations in your factory, in your meatpacking plant, the CEO goes to jail. Simple.
Exactly.
I mean, that's absolutely how it should be. You're the top guy of the company. You should know what's going on. If you're allowing kids to be put in dangerous situations, you're breaking the law, you're responsible. No fines, no slaps on the wrist, no, oh, hey, post a notice. No, you go to jail.
It makes sense to me. It's so... The corporation or the corporate crimes that just, it seems, never go accounted for. We need to start changing that. And, you know, I am grateful for the FTC and the DOJ and they're starting to crack down on some of this stuff. And it's going to be interesting to see some of these lawsuits, the Amazon lawsuit and the Google lawsuit. It's antitrust, but it also has a form of accountability at the executive level as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've been waiting for a very long time, and you know, I've been saying, you know, who's going to be this generation's Teddy Roosevelt? You know, who's going to be the trust buster? Who's finally going to start breaking up some of these monopolies because they're getting too big? I mean, I was talking to somebody about inflation today, and they were going, you know, it's all Joe Biden's fault. I'm going, no, it's not Joe Biden's fault. It's those 192 people who sit on the business roundtable who have been raking in obscene, massive profits, who have been gouging our eyes out for all these years. It's their fault. They're the ones who have caused this massive inflation. In fact, they've actually put a number to it. 52% of the inflation is because of corporate profits, because they're stealing from working people and giving to rich people. And that, to me, is something we should really be upset about.
Absolutely. We got workers all across the nation fighting for better wages when the CEOs are making just millions of dollars. You have the companies bragging about record profits all across the nation, and yet folks are not getting a livable wage. And then you also have prices. I mean, the pandemic absolutely put a spotlight on this, especially with our meat. So meats cost the most they ever have for consumers. Workers were working in dangerous situations for low wages. Farmers are getting squeezed. And so I'm trying to reach out to farmers, to consumers, to workers, and say, hey, we need to get together because we're getting screwed here.
Now, you know, when we were in Sioux City and we met up with you there on our Working Class Heroes tour, you talked about, you know, a lot of stuff that, you know, I hadn't even really thought about. The fact that Iowa, I thought Iowa was part of the breadbasket of America that fed everyone. And you said that the majority of the crops that, and maybe I got this wrong, but like the corn crops don't actually go to feeding people.
No, 90% of the food Iowans eat, it's imported. And most of it comes from California. And so there's a lot of the right wing loves to bash California when it comes to agriculture and stuff. But, you know, you don't crap on where you eat. And so but to me, that's also a huge opportunity where what we can do in Iowa is really create regional food systems. And that's something I'm really trying to push and work with. I was blessed enough to go to Farm Aid a few weeks ago. And they had farm tours, they had a conference, they had a couple social events, and then they actually had the concert, which was phenomenal. But coming out of that, just I was there with legislators in other Midwestern states and just talking about like the need to decentralize some of our food systems so we're not so vulnerable, and because food security is national security. And yep. So if the supply chain, like we saw during the pandemic, gets in a vulnerable situation, we could be in huge trouble. I mean, we saw what happened with the baby formula. That could happen very easily in milk with how concentrated we are. And so I to me, everything starts with antitrust. It's not the final answer, but it's the first step. And I'll say this about President Biden. He's the first president in my lifetime that he has addressed competition and done something about it in our economy, and with that executive order in his first summer in office. And then you have FTC, the chair, Lena Khan, doing a great job. You have Jonathan Kander at the antitrust division of the DOJ. They're pushing the envelope, and I love seeing it. I wish there was more. I wish the USDA could do more as well, but we're a step in the right direction, but there still needs a lot more work to do.
No, and this is important, and this is tangible stuff that could make people's lives better. But our mainstream corporate controlled media is never going to talk about, you know, our food right. supply in a way that makes any rational sense. Like Pennsylvania, one of the, I think it's either the first or the second largest industry is agriculture. You wouldn't think of that about Pennsylvania, but you drive through the center of the state, it's all farmland, you know, and you go through, you know, the Midwest. We should be producing all of our own food. We shouldn't be importing. At least I don't think so. And there have got to be better policies to get us to that point.
Not only are we importing, I mean, we're importing massive amounts of meat. And just think of how much meat we can produce ourselves. And so some of the trade laws are just trade agreements are just weird and bizarre. And I think we need to reestablish what we can do ourselves and what we need to do in order for some of this trade. But it just one of the other parts of it that I don't think it's discussed enough, and you mentioned corporate media doesn't tend to do this at all. We talk about country of origin labeling. Right now, a cow down in Brazil can be born down there, raised down there, harvested, brought up here in package and just repackaged. And because it's repackaged in the U.S., it can legally have made in the USA or some sort of USA stamp on it. And it's defrauding consumers. It's hurting our farmers and ranchers here. I mean, it used to be the law of the land. And then it just in 2015, they didn't renew it. And so I think that's just absolutely just awful for our farmers and ranchers, and also awful for consumers. And it's time we start addressing some of this stuff.
Yeah, but here's the thing: you know, we're put into this red hat, blue hat fight, rural versus urban. You know, people who live in cities aren't supposed to care about the people who live on farms. And I keep saying, you know, we're all interconnected. If farmers are getting screwed over, that means, you know, consumers in urban areas are going to get screwed over. There's a natural There's a natural, you know, kind of symbiotic relationship that should be there. But again, we're pitted against each other to where we're not allowed to talk about these things.
Well, and that's where if we have a regional food system and more focus on the regional food system, I think that's where we have our city rural communications and just like cohesiveness is when we have that and we have more appreciation for local foods and that just it makes us healthier. You know, I was on a we had a state legislators had this call about this new pill that's supposed to help with obesity. And I was like, yeah, that's great. But like, let's go on the other side of the problem where we have healthier food that we can that make it cheaper and easier. Like I played baseball in Europe this summer. I was shocked at how healthy and how cheap the food was over there. And it's they prioritize that. Instead for us, we're prioritizing a lot of other things that makes us unhealthy.
So how do we get to that? How do we get to a place where you know we act a little bit more like Europe and have healthier food?
Well, I think the first start is with the farm bill. You know, we there's a great farmer out of Indiana, Greg Gunthrop. He had a great thing at the Farm Aid. He was honored at the Farm Aid, and he had a great speech where he said, "You know, I'm sick and tired of the farm bill. What we need is a food bill." And I think he's exactly right. He has kind of bucked the trend of he's one of the few independent hog producers left in the country. And he has a special kind of hog that he helps raise. And it goes all over the country. And he does decent for himself. But he found this nice little niche in it. But that's a problem is like he's an outlier. We need him to be in the way he does things. We need that to be more common. And so to me, it's let's create that infrastructure. Let's start having government contracts saying like when it comes to with our food supply, that a percentage of it has to come from local food. Once you create these infrastructure, then the market's going to take off. Like the want and the desire are there. People want to know where their food comes from, and they if the cost wasn't an issue, they would prefer local.
Sure.
And so let's start subsidizing that rather than subsidizing getting cheap food like here's an example. 60% of the apple juice consumed in the U.S. comes from concentrate from China, and just think of the environmental impact of bringing all that into the U.S. and then shipping it all across the U.S. when almost every state, there's thousands of apple orchards all across the nation. We could be producing our own local apple juice, but that's the way it is because of
that's how corporate America wants it.
Exactly.
No, this is one of, you know, I go back to what I said earlier, you know, who's this generation, Teddy Roosevelt? How do we start breaking up these monopolies? Last question I've got for you, completely different topic, because I wanted to have a little time to talk about the insanity in the House. Any thoughts about what's going on in D.C. with the children in the House?
You know, it just goes to show how they don't give a crap about the Republicans when they're in office, how little they care about running the government. And you look at, I mean, it goes back to 2017 and when they passed they had the House, they had the Senate and President Trump was in office. And when they had a chance to pass anything they wanted, what did they pass? The main thing they passed, they couldn't get a lot of stuff done, but the one thing they passed was a tax break for the huge corporations and the super wealthy that were permanent tax cuts, and the working class tax cuts were temporary. If there's nothing more than those two things that they care about their rich donors, and they don't care about us, and they don't care about governing the government and making it a functional government, to me, that's it's clear as day.
Yeah. Spot on. JD, as always, I appreciate you taking time for us. Great stuff as usual. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, our good friend JD Schulten. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1983. That was the day that Lech Walesa was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for his work founding the Solidarity Union of Poland. The son of a carpenter, Walesa worked as an electrician in a shipyard. He was fired from his job for working to organize a union. Solidarity grew to include 10 million Poles. In 1981, Walesa was arrested and detained for nearly a year. He did not attend the Nobel Peace Prize ceremony because he feared he would not be allowed back into Poland once he left the country. His wife, Danuta, accepted the prize on his behalf. The speech he sent to the ceremony served as an inspiration to Polish Solidarity members and workers around the world. He wrote, "Let my words convey to you the joy and the never-extinguished hope of the millions of my brothers, the millions of working people in factories and offices associated in the union whose very name expresses one of the noblest aspirations of humanity. Today, all of them, like myself, feel greatly honored by the prize. With deep sorrow, I think of those who paid with their lives for the loyalty to Solidarity, of those who are behind prison bars and who are victims of repression. I think of all of those with whom I have traveled the same road and with whom I have shared the trials and tribulations of our time. We are fighting for the right of the working people to association and for the dignity of human labor." Walesa and his fellow workers did not give up on the dream of Solidarity. They continued to organize against the communist government for the rights of workers. In 1990, Walesa was elected president of Poland. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. Site, TheRickSmithShow.com. So Tracy sent me an email. and I can't read it verbatim, but because there's some colorful language, which I appreciate. I appreciate colorful language. I do. She's questioning my want of a Speaker Trump. Why in the, you know, blankety blank blank would you want Donald Trump as Speaker? Well, first and foremost, I said from the beginning, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. There aren't going to be enough Republicans who are going to step forward and say, yeah, that's our guy, because they're going to have to go back home and run for re-election having done that. And look, as Marjorie Greene said, as Marjorie Three Names pointed out, it will be a MAGA rally every day. It'll be a rally every day. It won't be governing. There'll be no agenda. It'll be propaganda every day. It'll be, well, a giant S show. Even more than it is now. And look, it's only temporary. He doesn't want to do it full time. So it's only a temporary fix. And Republicans need, you know, actual leadership. And I don't know who that leader is going to be. Because understand what the speaker's leadership power is. And McCarthy was their big fundraiser. If you lose your big fundraiser and you don't have someone to replace it, you got problems electorally. And this is where the Republicans really are going to have some problems, because they just kicked their biggest fundraiser, you know, right you know where. Now, who steps into that? Jim Jordan? Really? One of the most unlikable guys in Congress? Seriously? With the baggage he's got? With all of the stuff that... all of the stuff that will come up around his time at Ohio State and all of the sex scandal and all the, you know, all of that. Or Steve Scalise, the guy who said, and I don't even understand this, the guy who said he's David Duke without the baggage. I don't know what that means. Does that mean he's a racist white supremacist that people don't know yet he's a racist white supremacist? I don't even know what that means and why you would say it. Bizarre. But that seems to be where the Republican leadership could be chosen from. Now, there may be someone. I know there's some other people who are, you know, trying to, you know, do some back climbing. But I don't see any solution real soon. And for me, look, Tracy, you know, the reality is you put Trump in there, you've got massive chaos. And the American people will see massive chaos. Maybe it takes that kind of a shock to the system. Maybe it takes the kind of, you know, just out and out insanity for people to finally wake up and go, this isn't normal. This isn't right. As Daniel Ziblatt, the professor of government at Harvard University, was quoted saying, if you want to know what it looks like when democracy is in trouble, this is what it looks like. It should set off alarm bells that something is not right. We should all be on high alert. That's the reality. So that's why, Tracy, but I appreciate the email. And if you want to email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I answer all emails personally. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.